Welcome to Star from the Universe On Call. I am Paul Franz, owner of Franz Games, of an SFB Online, FedCom Online, and Starfleet Warlord. Just a reminder how to talk, join us via TalkCast every Thursday and Friday at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You have two options. Number one, you can either go to the Discord server and join us there. You can listen live there on the Discord server. The link is right there on sfuoncall.com. Or you can join us at twitch.tv. Yes, twitch.tv/sfuoncall. You can watch the stream. The video is streamed there, and also you can chat with us there. So if you want to interact, if you actually want to participate, you go to the Discord server. If you just want to listen and actually participate maybe via the chat, then go to twitch.tv. Also, if you need to contact me for any reason, my email address is sfuoncall@gmail.com. It's sfuoncall@gmail.com. Also, you want to follow my Twitter account. I have, of course, my podcast account. It's sfuoncall. If you want to follow my personal account, that's Paul Franz. That's P-A-U-L-F-R-A-N-Z. There's no T in that. Also, Franz Games, FranzGames. Again, there's no T in that. Of course, also have accounts on Blue Sky. So if you want to follow my podcast account there, that's sfuoncall.bsky.social. Or if you want to follow my personal set business account, that's going to be franzgames.com. And of course, this lovely TalkCast gets into the podcast, available on iTunes, various other feeds around the net. So quick news, AB, from ADB this week. Good news, Steve Petchko was in the office 2 days this week working on Module K. He's going over the different Module K SSDs that have been worked on and making sure everything is good to go for that. And Gene Sexton, I think it's still Sexton. I know she got married. I wasn't sure if she changed her last name or not when she married Al. Told Mike West to submit a formal proposal for C4K gunboats for the simulator race. Module C4, remember that one? From way back when? Separately, a proposal for a book of extra ROM and SSD books. Yeah, all the Demon Hawk variants, get them all in there. That's one thing they're thinking about. Also, Gene Sexton also greenlit the ACTA SF Reinforcements 2 addition to the ADB lineup. So that's another thing that's going to be in the works going forward. I'm not sure how long it's going to take for that one. Obviously, the other two are proposals, and they're also working on Module K and also Module R5. And this week, I found on the online store, we have the F&E ISE war charts. It's only $4, pretty expensive. At the end of the General War came the ISE war. The Interstellar Concordium concluded that the rest of the Alpha Octant was criminally insane. They had to be protected from their own dangerous ideas and violent impulses. Not going to mention anything. The chart book includes 3 different ISC fleet charts, 1 ISC capital chart, 12 ISC depot repair track chart with other charts, 1 ISC battle board, 1 standard battle board, 1 economics forum, and this chart book is designed to be accompanied with the ISC war rulebook. You must have expansion to use these charts. So basically, it's additional stuff that you can purchase in addition to the ISC rulebook, ISC war rulebook. That expansion to the F&E. And those of you who don't know what F&E is, that's Federation and Empire. That's what F&E stands for. It's like SFB stands for Starfleet, is an abbreviation for Starfleet Battles. Just a reminder, I've not said this for a while, just a reminder, there's a lot of free stuff on ADB, especially, you can get all kinds of free stuff from desktop photos, pictures to photos, backgrounds for your phones, to you can get the first missions, which is basically Federation Commander boiled down to a free version that's available, so you get a feeling for what Federation Commander is without paying for it. So the way you can experience the game without actually paying for it, so you get a feeling for it and say, do you really want to spend how much money you want to spend on it. Obviously, Federation Commander, you can spend a lot of money, especially on those ship cards, which I'm hoping someday maybe they'll actually get back to creating ship cards. I understand they're expensive, and if they ever do ship cards again, they will probably reprint them. They will probably have to up the cost on that. So, I'll just mention here the wallpapers. You can go to https://www.starfleetgames.com/wallpapers.html. I know that's kind of weird extension, but it is what it is. And there's wonderful wallpapers there. Moving onward and forward, when it comes to the SFB Online tournaments, the Sapphire Stars 19 tournament is still looking for signups. Also, the 500 BPV tournament is completed with Deanna Medson over, who was flying the Klingon, over Frank LeMay, who was flying the Federation. They completed in 6 turns and only took them 18 hours. Yes, 18 hours. Anyone who's ever played Fleet Battles for SFB knows that, that actually is not too bad. So even playing it online, i.e., you don't have to set up the counters, you don't have to move everything by hand. That's still a lot of time. If there's any way to improve that time, I don't think so. Obviously, there might be a ways of improving the client to help in that category. I'm not quite sure about that, but you have to wait. Let's see if I can get any ideas when it comes to usually the tough part is in theory, some of the things you can do with like drones, automate the movement drones. Of course, people squawk at that because they want the players themselves to know how to move the pieces and so forth. And I think it's uncompetitive if you start doing that. Well, it's it can be an option for those doing this. The idea is to help speed things along. And moving on forward, when it comes to the library report, there's actually no updates on either SFB or FedCom library. Big surprise. I think Frank was probably busy really with the game. And with that is the news for this week. And it's me, yes, the one and all Paul Franz, welcoming you to Starfleet Universe On Call. And tonight, well, we got Doug. Doug is here. I just haven't heard anything from him. And I also saw Neon is here too. If he wants to say hello, he can say hello. Nope. Matt is not saying hello. Okay. That is fine. But we're gonna continue on. This evening, relatively quickly, let's just do one quick thing. Oh, I gotta do this before I really go live.
Hello.
Hello. Oh, there you are. Hi. Say hi, Doug.
Hi.
And done. Okay. So I got that's up. That's up. Awesome. How are you doing this evening?
I are here. How are you?
Good, good. Little warm.
Can you hear me all right?
Yeah, I can hear you fine. I can hear you fine.
Okay.
Turn up
Good.
my headphones just a tiny bit. For those of you who haven't already heard, or one way or the other, whether it's you're hanging out at the SFU discussion board, or you are actually listening to the news portion of this podcast slash the news video on YouTube, because actually on YouTube I have now split up the news portion and the regular portion of the show, the live portion of the show, into two different videos, and so far I've actually got some. Okay, given that I only have one response from a single person that says I like having it separate, and no one's complaining that now you have too many videos, I'd say it's a good one. I have to double check on the numbers, Last time I checked, which was last week, the numbers when it comes to YouTube was, as strangely as it sounds, the overall the video watches are the same, you know, for whether it's the news portion or it is the actual episode where, you know, the live portion of the show. They seem to be relatively the same. The only difference was that there was I did have a news portion, which I posted four videos right on the same day because I forgot to actually had gotten around to posting the video because normally it takes work and I just had been too busy. So posting just the news portion and the live portion separately is a lot easier. I can get things done quicker, a lot less work to do. Well, strangely enough, that sounds weird, but there's a lot less work to do to get it, so I don't have to go all around and just try to put piece them together and so forth. But you know, so I post them all at the same time, and the news portion, that one news video, that one wasn't watched. That was like way low compared to the latest news, which was around the same as the other videos, including the previous week's episode. You know, so I had the three of the videos had the same numbers, and then one, which was the news portion, was very low, comparatively speaking. Hey, so that was interesting, actually. I'm just going to keep an eye on it. I have not looked at the analytics data as of this week, and that's one of those things that I want to wait a few weeks when it comes to overall numbers before I really talk about much, because I said on that the numbers, that's fine. Actually to get proper analytics from the actual watches to see if the more people are actually watching long more of the video. Depends. My blind guess is a blind guess on my part is that people who people are more likely to watch the full news episode because the full news episode is only anywhere between 5 and 8 minutes long compared to this portion of the show, which can last anywhere between, I'd say, 45 minutes and an hour and a half. You know, it's rarely 45 minutes though. It can be when either I have to get going or the topic, the last topic that's been discussed is faded out, and I just don't want to start a new topic because of it's. I see it's kind of pointless, and just a new topic is just going to make us run longer. And this is there's only so long that this episode can run time wise for me. So anyway, get back to the topic at hand. The topic at hand is I was going to continue on last week's topic about the 500 BPP tournament when it comes to the Federation for the Klingon. Very interesting. And that is that it from the looks of it, the Klingons did much fairly well. And the question is, in the end, did the Federation, well, actually, according to Frank, the Federation goofed. Okay. But see, that's okay. Let's get back to that. And that is that overall, any game, I'm the first one that, of course, comes to mind is big surprise. Bing, bing. I got Orioles. For those of you on the video, can see my Orioles shirt. Possibly. That is, and that is if you can take advantage of a person's mistakes, you're good. And but if the person makes no mistakes, then you might lose. You're a lot more likely to lose. It's taking advantage of those mistakes that the other player makes that really helps you win that game. And that's what feels like for Frank happened to him. Just overall, Frank, you know, let's put it all up. It took 18 hours to play the game, which was, let me just give a big rundown of that when it comes to turns and hours. Actually, turns one and two only took 4 hours between those two turns. That doesn't surprise me, as I mentioned, I think last week, that turn one, it's a push. It always is a push in the come this tournament, because of you're starting at around 80 hexes right in the distance. So the first turn, you're just coming towards each other, possibly charging up photons. In the case of Federation, they might want to overload the photons, might do something like that. Probably not, as you know, that was not the case when it comes to Frank. Frank's actually used proxy. Sorry, for those of you on the video, I was looking underneath my desk because I have my one of my kittens is right down there, in a little box right at my feet. Turn three was 3 hours. Turn four was a quick 1 hour. Don't ask me why. I think basically because there was no action, it was more like running around, trying to find some, both opponents trying to find some room when it comes to trying to keep their down shields away from the opponent, each other. Turn five was 4 hours, and turn six was 6 hours. So let's say, at the very least, it was a long, long game. And what was it? Dana was just pointing out this when it comes to, Dana mentioned that he played a long game with Peter. He said, "Peter, while our game was long, I enjoyed it. It was enjoyable. If you want to play a variant or pick up a new forces at some time as a one-off, let me know. And I'd run a 500 BPV Lyran fleet against a Zinni force for fun," which to me, hey, that sounds like a fun game because it's a classic matchup. They are meant to fight one another. They're always, if you look back when it comes to the history of SFB, and more importantly, when it comes to also the history, if you see it in the Federation Empire, that they've been the Zinni and the Lyrans have been fighting wars for a long time. So in theory, they should have pretty compatible ships between each other. So it should be a close battle between the two. One is good defense, big surprise to ASGs, which is beautiful against the drones, especially when the drones are Type 1 drones. That's when the Zinni pulls out things like the slug drones and specialty drones. And that's why, also remember, the Zinni has a higher percentage of specialized drones. So that was quite cool. And obviously Frank did a boo-boo and earlier in the game. He's mentioned it also in the posting. Real quick, going over turn five, I'm gonna skip turn four because there's nothing. There actually was some episodes. Okay, I'm gonna back up here just for a moment. And that is, I actually recorded turn three and turn four. I got videos. To my mind, that there wasn't much action overall, except for there was some action early on in turn three. But other than that, there wasn't any action for the rest of turn three and turn four that I recorded. And of course, what happens? They announce, "Oh, we're gonna play it like 9 a.m. It's Saturday morning." It's like, I can't record that because I'm gonna be gone. And looks like they completed on this past Monday night, 7 p.m. Again, 7 p.m. I'm gone. Sorry, guys. This is not the only thing I do. In my case, I have an archery. I had an archery club meeting on Monday night. Saturday morning, I have a men's group which I go to and I attend. And, get together with some guys on every Saturday morning. So there was no way I was gonna make it the Saturday morning. So, It's funny because it looks like this was on Sunday where they play turn five, which I don't think they pre-announced. Let's do one quick check here and see if they announced another. Oh, they got turn four completed as of Saturday night. They actually did announce they were going to be playing at 7 p.m. when they announced it on. Okay, last night. So they played at 7 p.m. Actually, that was when I noticed they got turn four completed, where basically Impulse One, that the Klingon took a shot at the BCF 10 phaser ones, and oh, sorry, it took a shot with the BCF, the Federation. Somebody keeps on dropping in and out. Not you, I think it's Neon, Matt. So the BCF took a shot at the C7, I think. Yeah, at the C7, which was 41 damage and 11 internals. Two phasers, a phaser one and a phaser three, a drone rack, two warp, and the rest of the hull. The C7 also shot back on that on Impulse One of turn four, doing 15 the BCF number shield number one, an E4 shot at range two, a range. Shot two, sorry, shot two, range 15 disruptors, doing three damage on shield number five. Just to let you know, the E4s in this played an interesting part in this combat. To me, it was interesting because basically the E4s played a game of annoyance. They would circle around separate from the C7 and the D6D, which basically the main all of the Federation units were focused on those two ships. They didn't worry about the E4s. The E4s would come back and they keep on sniping at the force. Now later on, this is turn four. Later on they get whacked by the feds. They said, "Ah, we're done with this," and they fired him, which is, to me, that's what you want to do. As a Klingon, you want the E4s to take it on the chin, because that firepower that was now unloaded on E4s are now not going to be able to fire on the C7 or the D6D. Impulse two, the B6, this is turn four, Impulse two, the BCF fired the standards at C7 down shield, and they missed. And that was with a. Plus zero. No, there was no shift because the scout, even though he only had one special sensor at this point, gave the BCF six ECTM, and also the BCF generated three ECTM, so that's what, so they could have a zero shift against the C7. And the C7 D70, they whack the scatter pack from drones using ads. And also, D6 used all its five phasers, two shots as phaser threes, i.e., not blanding itself. Turn five plus the C7 and D7, D6D ended up turning left, facing B, then A, and running for the north end of the map. E4 turns and north as well. E4 B lands in the scat effect shuttle and turn from turn two and turns left. They're basically. I remember this part of it, which is you have the feds coming up the middle. You got the C7 going this way and going up towards going the north, going B and then A. The fours are going basically going off to the left and circling around to circle around to go after the feds. And at the and they ended the turn with the E4s, 16 hexes from the DDL facing off the facing F on its 6-1 boundary. That's and the second E4 was 20 hexes away from the feds, 5-6, the 5-6 boundary facing E. And there's no end of turn for the feds. The Klingons fix the drone rack for the D6D and the phaser 2 for the E4B. Took two turns because of CDR. Big surprise. And a one box shield on E4B. My guess is that was the down shield. And in the turn, Klingons have 72 points of damage, 3 down shields, 3 on number 7, number 2 on the D6D, and 1 box on the E4B. And half strength shield number 5. The Feds had, at the end of turn 4, the Feds have 85 shield damage, 1 down shield for the scout, half strength number 1, half strength number 5 on the BCF, plus a couple of points on 2 and 6. NCL has strength number 2 and number 6. DDL had no damage whatsoever. For the most part, this will bear for the rest of the game, which is the DDL, the destroyer leader, did not get hit by any damage whatsoever. The Klingons mainly focused on the BCF and the NCL, which was interesting because of later on, the drone superiority definitely played out in this game. Basically, Dana then later on mentions that, okay, he's going up towards the top of the board, and he said he can squeeze along the top end of the map unless the Fed gets lucky, because he can, in theory, the Fed can pin him against the wall and close the range. So it was definitely interesting in that regard. Okay, give me a sec. Get back to turn 5. Completed this morning turn. The EW, as Dana was reporting, as of, which was that the C7 has 4 ECM, may increase he made an increase. The 27, he's just mentioning that the speed plot, which was for C7, it was 28 for 8 impulses, 20 for 16 impulses, and 27 for the rest of the turn, which is the other 8 impulses. And he used the 27, he did that via reserve power. Personally, I would never have ever posted that ever in my life, because I don't mention the key, what I use for my batteries for and what I did not. And comes to the EW for the rest of the Klingon fleet, there's no EW at all. Oops, I did not mean to do that. Sorry, I flipped back, so I don't see it. But anyway, and then there's plenty of ECM, or like ECCM, which comes from the NCL and the destroyer leader. 6 for the NCL and 5 for the destroyer leader. There's 2 points of ECM when it comes to the Federation scout, and also 0 EW for the BCF. Now, C7 and D7, this is on turn 5, launch drones after the scatter pack, the Fed scatter pack drones over the first couple impulses, basically drone to drone death. With the C7 shot one drone with a Phaser 3, and then C7 and D6 2 continued to heading direction F for 5 to 8, requiring until they reached the boundary when they turned east. So basically, he is now pinned against the boundary of the map. And then he turned E and side slipped along the edge, which makes sense. Big surprise, the NCL and the DDL, they both went north. The strong number one shield facing the C7, and the DDL slipped back to lose a hex, basically to have it get it so they're in the same hex, because the DDL actually was in front of the NCL heading north. Early on, the BCO had launched actually 2 ECM drones, 1 for itself, 1 for the NCL, and the D6D had used the challenge to break both lock-ons. Boy, it's nice when you actually have a scout with lots of special channels, you know? That's not the first time that the ECM drones, that the D6D, sorry, guys, hang on. The D6D had used its special channels to break lock-ons ECM drones. So obviously, that seems to be a very, very effective tactic. And I agree with the use of that because of it requires very little energy. Two, it cuts back on the necessary ECCCM, ECCCM, ECCM. Countermeasures, which is great. Impulse 24 of turn 5, the C7 did not slip back to the wall, but went straight ahead, giving the NCL and DDL range 8 on 12 point number 5. However, he got the shield boundary on the number 12, on the 12 point number 6 on the NCL, which is awesome. So we fired at each other. This is Impulse 24. The fight shot 2 phase of 1 at the Klingon ECM drone, killing it. Then 6 phase of 1s at the C7 with a plus 1 shift. The NCL dropped 2 ECCM and raised 2 ECM from battery. He got an unlucky roll and did 3 points. Average plus 1 shift at range 8 would have been 9 point, no, would have been 9 points. I 1.5 each, so he rolled pretty poorly. The C7 raised ECCM from the battery, so I got played. And he still had a plus one shooting at the NCL. And if he added a point of ECM instead of the NCL, would have had a plus two shift on me. But I did all right. I fired one disruptor and hit, did 10 points of phase of damage with 6 phase of ones. So above average, and dropped the shield number 6 and got a phaser 3 as a single internal on the NCL. So he has a down at this point. The NCL has a down number 6 shield. The next impulse, the NCL and DDL turned left. Big surprise because now the NCL has a down shield and he doesn't want to leave that facing the Klingons. So he turned left to get the down shield out of arc. And of course, the DDL followed because of it. They're stacked together and they're working in concert. At this point, I'm not sure where the BCF is. But I get a range. But slip right onto, okay, the NCLs and DDL slip right on 32, impulse 32, losing a hex if he's trying to cut me off, but getting a range 7 to center line to end the turn. Fired 4 right side phaser 1 at no shift. This is the Klingon, I think. To 9 points of damage, drop. Okay, no, this is the Fed firing. Dropping the C7 shield, and C7 didn't reinforce, so probably out of batteries. Big surprise. E4A took an early shot at the BCF on damage shield number 5 and hit with 1 range 12-ish disruptor for 3 points of damage, which he reinforced. Then it skirted along the side of the BCF as it turned left. They turned facing F. And of course, what he's doing is he's chasing the C7 and D6D. D4 turned, actually turned north near the end of the turn, and that range got ended at range 9 to the BCF and range 6 to the scout. D4, the second E4, did not want to get close too soon, but ended impulse 32 at range 15 on the NCL on the down shield and 9 hexes off BCF number 6, which is damaged. A little close there, but the BCF wants to kill the E4. He's not shooting at the C7. Oh, big surprise. Then it turned the scout actually fixed the impulse as APR. NCL fixed the shield box on number 6, so the shield isn't down on impulse number 1. And the C7 also fixed the drone rack at the end of that of turn 5. And the E4 fixed the damage shield number 2, so now it's 2 boxes instead of 1, and failed the EDR roll. Also, Klingon found out that the EDR exit announced at the start of the turn, not at the end of the turn. And the turn, Klingon has more drones than the Fed. Last turn was an aberration. Big surprise. He does some thinking about the game and reports his thoughts when it comes to what the BCF could possibly do. Okay. Now this is going on to turn 6. Turn 6, which took 5 hours, and there were every ship had two or three, four, two to four speed changes. There's a lot of speed changes in this one. Impulse one, the summary, here's the summary. There's Impulse one, the NCL shot at range eight, four phaser ones, four standard photons, and but he had a plan. Then I screwed up, ignored my plan, and thought I lost. C7 was going to generate six ECM, sorry, ECM, get lone ECM by the D7, D6D, and D6 was going to jam the NCL for ECM. I expected the NCL to have six ECCM and get lone six ECCM from the scout. So he was going to have a plus two shift on the shot. In the speed announcement, BCF and NCL announced 28, and the scout announced 22. The scout was short on power, and as like it was very short on power. I'm surprised it's even moving. It was even moving that fast, and actually that is only for a momentary time. So Dan said, I thought to myself, oh, he was going to chase me down and get closer, not shoot at range eight. I was going 20, 24 on C7, with upcoming slowed down to 12 to launch the drogue, the drone drogue he had. Then back to 20, similar to D6D. I thought maybe I need to jam the BCF more than the NCL and the FFS. Isn't going to lone its ECM. He's going to try to range for the, trying to get the range four. The NCL probably doesn't have full torps, and BCF doesn't have full torps, which is kind of obvious. But if he gets close, it won't matter, which is very true. Anyway, to change my mind, I didn't jam the NCL per my plan. The scout did loan him six ECCM that slowed down. Then slow down fast after. NCL used battery up to up the ECCM to six. So basically, he guessed right and then he changed the plan. The NCL shot, then slowed down fast after the BCF chased a bit, and then slowed down fast after that. He hit with three standards and did 9 points of damage. And did nine from the four phaser ones for 32, 33 internals, two effective general. Before the battery died. And if I would jammed him up, it would have been only if he would done gone according to his plan, it would have been one photon and six phaser points, 6 points of phaser damage for 14 internals minus general. So the end of Impulse One is now 41 internals and the BCF isn't damaged. After a full turn of dodging, though, the last six drones from the scatter pack could not be stopped by a T-bomb. And he tried, this is the scatter pack from the Klingon. He tried the Fed tried to lab at range five and missed three of the attempts. If he had figured out, if he could figure out the target, then he could place the tail bombs correctly. But which is understandable why, that's why he was labbing at range five. Because most of the time for us tournament people, we don't lab outside of range two because of we know what the target is, we just don't know what kind of drones it is. So, whether it's type one or type four. And that's one thing that always was I still remember it was interesting about my Praetorian against the Federation, which was that when it comes to the drones, basically use type ones the whole time. I never got anything but a type one. Which was interesting. Okay, but he had to guess at target drones, but had valid targeting to all his ships. He guessed at protecting the BCF and DDL with his placement, and the target was the NCL. It seemed like a good target when I lost the nine impulse earlier, as I knew he had to be sl slow be to be slowing more. So Impulse 32, the NCL took six Type 1 fast drones for 48 more internals. And then the BCF would have been in trouble from a D6D of all on all ships on turn seven with some help on the C7, which would have fired three range eight UIM. Gotta love that. overloads with four phaser ones on a 9-point shield number four. Then this D6D was three hexes, only three hexes, behind the number four shield. And the turn going faster and able to launch six drones early in turn number six. And the BCF had no 360 phasers left and only two right side phaser ones. Still hadn't shot at the DDL, as I mentioned. He didn't do that at all the whole game. Both E4s were wrecks because but they freely charged and said, you need to shoot your F-Torps at me and not the C7, although one of them did get a range 2 of the BCF back shield and give it 20 damage on 9-point shield. The BCF had no phasers to spare for it, and the other one earlier did close on the BCF after eating both Fs on number 1. It came through okay as it flew past it. As it flew past, got tracked, and the BCF slipped into the mine hex, which was the same hex for the Impulse 5 drones detonated, and so the M4 took a T-bomb on the Dell shield number 1, becoming really bad. So at the end, there was two badly crippled E4s. All that was left, was four power, a couple weapons of control each, 41 internals to the C7, destroyed 9 power, 7 battery, 1 disruptor and 4 phasers, 2 were fixed, and 9 internals to the D6D, with 1 power after repair and 2 phaser 2s destroyed. The BCF had 24 internals in multiple volleys, down 6 phaser 1s, 2 drones, a photon, and 4 power. The NCL was mostly wrecked with 8 power, 3 phasers, and 2 photons left. The DDL was untouched, and of course, the Federation Frigate Scout was crippled. At that point, Frank went, I give up. So to say the very least, it was a really, really good game. As I pointed out, I think previously, anyway, which is, of course, the Klingon Federation fight is always a good fight. Obviously, it was a lot, lots and lots of drones. If you listen to the previous episode, lots of T-bombs. There was lots of T-bombs put out there to, in some cases, ineffectively, to kill drones. Because the Klingon definitely, Dana needs more practice putting down T-bombs. Actually, that's one thing I was just thinking about, is that you have to be careful if you fly the Lyrans against the Zinni when it comes to T-bombs. T-bombs, if they go through the ESG, they explode on the ESG and they reduce the ESG itself. So that's one something that if mm-hmm. Dana does do the Lyran versus Zinni combat battle, that is something to keep in mind. Again,
that's why you use your transporters for them.
True. But at the same time, you have the drones coming in, and you got to make sure that those T-bombs, that you don't, because now you, instead of having a single hex to worry about, okay, worrying about the T-bombs, you have to worry about now your ESG. If you have ESG up, other than mm-hmm. range 0, if you have it like range 2 or 3.
Well, the question is, how are you using your ESGs? Are you going to use them defensively or offensively? You know, it's like, why are they up at that point?
Right. Agreed.
I mean, you could use them to reduce all the drones and use phaser 3s to finish them off. Or you could save them and use them in a tighter amount offensively against the other opponent.
True.
Among other things. There's different ways to do it.
Yeah. The Lyran, you get
that. But yeah, kicking out your mines when you have your T-bombs, when you have ESGs up, is not a good idea.
Yeah. I still remember there was a comment, a little minor blip in history when it comes to SFB that's mentioned actually in the rule book when it comes to the first use of fighters. For when it comes to having a Lyran carrier, first time the Lyrans use fighters, and the captain flying the carrier did not think about that it's a carrier. As he launched the fighters and totally and had drones incoming, what to do? Raise the ESGs and blow away his fighters. So at the very least, that was not a good day for them. But that was,
It's
yeah, it mentioned in the rule book that happened. So
what
it's
we
definitely.
refer to as a playtest failure.
Very, very true. Very true. Okay. But so that for those of you, that is the quick rundown of that game. Obviously, I'm hoping those of you are listening actually got a chance to at least watch some of the game. I watched not very much of it. I did record it. Some of the recording I did while I was not actually sitting at the computer. I started the recording, let it fly, make sure that the all of the counters were on the board, and so got the follow it, make sure the chat room was viewable, because the one big thing obviously that when it comes on that part of it, that the chat rooms is important, because you need to know what the notifications of okay, what's firing and so forth. The one thing that I did not do in the in that video, and this is something I was purposeful, and that is I did not record the sound. That is that Frank and Dana had set up used one of the rooms, one of the channels on the Discord server, because I have let me come back here just quick. I got three game channels at the moment. I've yet to see all of them used at the same time. The idea is that as a game's going on, you can use one of the game channels, number one, two, and three, to actually talk, with your opponent, and or possibly even if not, maybe not your opponent, maybe just for teaching purposes, use it. But in the case of Frank and Dana, they were actually talking over that. In theory, I could have recorded it, but the reason why I did not was because I knew that if I actually recorded a video and played it here, because that's why that would be the only reason for me to actually record it, I would not be playing back the sound, because of I'd be commenting on the different moves, and per normal I'd be flying at like 4x speed so that we could quickly go through it. Now, obviously, if I had recorded all 18 hours, it would that have been like somewhere around 6 episodes, 4 to 6 episodes to actually do it. Though, as I mentioned, when it comes to turn one, if I had recorded turn one, I probably would have skipped the whole turn one. That whole I'm not sure how, my guess is like 30 to 45 minutes. Because as long as you don't, when it comes to turn one, as long as you're just flying in, you don't do things like, oh, I need to, launch this drone. I need to do some more additional setup, or in, this is one thing I've never, because here's the one thing about this, the B500 BPP tournament. That is, okay, you got a large board. But the board is fixed. It does not a floating map. So in theory, if you wanted to, and I'm not saying this is a good tactic at all. I'm really not, but it is an interesting idea. And that is, in theory, what you can do is actually, as part of your setup, you can actually set up a minor minefield. That if you want to, you can use as a bit of terrain on the map. Would I do that? Probably not. It's probably better to save your T-bombs and use them for, especially in the case of against a Federation or Klingon or somebody who has drones. the T-bombs are better left for protecting yourself from those drones. Especially when, because normally the amount of drones is greater than the amount of your ability to actually defend against those drones to a certain degree. The great thing about this tournament is that there was no fighters, no attrition units were allowed. Though I think they did allow it for the Lirans to have some PFs. But no, I don't think anybody actually selected a Liren. Let's see if I can check real fast. My guess is no. And see if I can find it real quick about what who picked what. My guess is I'm not gonna do this really. I'm not gonna do this too long. If I can't find it quickly, I am. Oh, okay, actually, there was one Federation versus Liren combat. So I see it was mentioned. It said Fed Liren affair. So there actually was. Yeah, I'll just mention, this is one of those things that I've mentioned. Oh, remember one thing. This is the first time the tournament runs. We'll be learning experience. And when the next fleet tournament occurs, we'll take what we learned and change the setup and our rules. Yeah. So, of course, the big question is going to come down to one thing. What will Jeff do this again? Now, obviously, let me look at this real quick. This tournament, which was a very limited tournament, didn't have that many people playing in it. It started back in February, and it's now August. So basically, it took 6 months to play out this tournament, which is actually, in my mind, given that we're playing fleet battles, or small fleet battles. 500 BPV is a small fleet, almost squadron. It's around squadron level when it comes to the amount of BPV. So it took 6 months, and overall, that's not bad considering. Yeah, we had me. I was Seltorran. We had the Liren. We had the Klingons. We had the Romulans. Yeah, oh boy. Federation, the Gorns, and two other Feds. So we had plenty of Fed players playing. I must okay. When it comes to the tournament, the one thing that I think everybody will have to agree upon, and that is that the one which was done by Jason, yeah, I think Jason, he with a five destroyer pluses, which basically gave him 20 prox photons every other turn, is absolutely insane. Now, in the end, I won because, I think part of it was that he just didn't want to spend more time to play it out. I think if he played it out, I think overall he would have won. But it is what it is, because and part of that is my own stupidity, because I let him get that one, the turn one shot with five with the 20 prox photons at range 30 and hit one of my destroyers. Learned my lesson. I screwed up there on that one. I'll never do that again. The question and the thing is, we ended okay. I feel like that overall, when it comes to the tournament, they'll actually learn had two Bobcats, two PFs. Obviously he lost, but anyhow, get back to it. I feel like that you need the scouts. Especially with EW and all, I think the because I think that plays out overall because of when it comes to non-scout versus scout, the scout player won. Now, at the same time, you got my no scout versus a scout fleet was, I think, a poor example of that. Just overall, because of the you have the Saltorians versus the Feds, which had a lot of drones, and I was constantly flying, going against those drones. It was one of those battles that is definitely, I think, one might have been played much better on a floating map. That's one thing. The other thing is that the Saltorian has no seeking weapons, so there's the Federation just can be constantly attacking. Overall, even if it's just launching another flight of drones. Now, from the look, the one thing that I'm not used to, and I think things could have gone definitely differently for me, is if I definitely would have taken the long term battle. That is, take the drone, try and stay away from the drone, try and stay away from the main fleet, and then deal with the drones as he's launching the drones. And because of one thing that happens is that you can run the Fed out of drones because he has no real, it doesn't have the drone bombardment and the drone bomb, sorry, drone bombardment. Units, so it doesn't have any cargo spaces. So yeah, and especially with the time frame we're talking about, there was only one set of reloads for all of the ships. Therefore, it's a little bit easier to run the personnel drones. Now, that's the beauty of the Romulans, in that the Romulans have no. Don't have drones. They have plasma, so they always can recharge the plasma. I forget how. Obviously, the guy playing the Romulans lost. I know Peter also lost against. Peter lost against the Klingon, and I forget how bad that was. I think the Romulan versus the. Let me think. Was he? I think he played. That was against the Fed? Can't remember. But Vandor played against. Actually, the funny thing is, he picked kind of like the fleet that I wanted to fly. I wanted to fly the Romulans. But he picked the Romulans. Oh, I should probably play the Saltorians. And unfortunately, they didn't let me play the Andromedans. I would have loved to play the Andromedans. Now, with the Andromedans, when it comes to the Feds would have probably beat him up pretty good. But the that I have to look at if I could have done the Andromeda, but I probably would have to look up to see exactly what kind of fleet I would do, because of obviously years come into play there. Actually, do I? I don't think I do. I'm just gonna do really quick if I see if I have it already open. And let me look at the window. Da, 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 da. No, I do not have it open. Nope. And they're not in my recents, right? Correct. Don't have the what chart is that? I don't remember what the chart is. Anyway. Because when it comes to the years of the Andromedans, it would have been interesting. I probably would have to. I would love to take the Eel if I was the Andromedan, because Eel is a good scout overall. Especially if you do the whole thing of tracking it, so you give it a lot more power available to it on a consistent basis. Because the big thing about the Eel is, yeah, you've got. If I call correctly, you've got like four batteries, so you got 20 reserve power. But if you're trying to, the drone tries to fly too fast, it will drain those batteries so fast that it's crazy. And of course, if I was flying the Andromeda, then the question would be, is it the peekaboo, or which is basically take the problem. Always the problem with this, which is having the satellite ships inside the mothership and then going pop, is that it takes a lot of power to go pop because of the amount of energy for the transporters. And obviously, you want to try to avoid using your displacement device if possible. You can obviously deploy your satellite ship using the displacement device, but then, of course, you have to roll. So there's a possibility you might not land exactly where you want. Obviously, that's a little cheaper, but then you've now used one of your displacement devices to for an offensive thing. I can see doing that in the case of emergency if your batteries are low and you want to get that satellite ship out so you can have that as part of the attack. That's fine. My guess is most of the time you want to have the satellite ships running around with the mothership, and only and have it so that basically the mothership can actually transport them back into the mothership so that it would save any satellite ship that might have been possibly destroyed in that case. Now, that does cause other issues, which is the draining of the panels is very slow because you can't actually release the energy. It's not like you can release the energy from the satellite ships and it goes right into the batteries of the mothership. That would be fantastic if you could do that, but it can't. The energy always goes one way. Now, the one thing that the client does not currently do, and I've never since it's not been there hasn't been enough fleet play with Andromedans, there hasn't been a need for it, which is that if a mothership is hit and it takes internals and the hangar bay, the shuttle bay, actually gets hit, that hits something that's in the hangar. At that point, you have to have it hit that a ship. Now, hopefully, you don't have your satellite ship, which has that's the only thing in the hangar, and it has full panels. Because it has full panels, now it's going to take internals. In theory, if it's really in bad shape, it could cause the satellite ship to blow up within the mothership. I mean, that this is really I mean, it has to be really bad off where the mothership is trying to salvage that satellite ship that desperately. It can cause issues, and of course, that causes issues with the client because it kind of skips shuttles because hangars aren't shuttles, and it makes it difficult when you have a hangar, and you actually have you don't have something in it, or you do have something in it. I've not changed. The damage, in theory, I can do it, which is I have to one add the client to the client that this satellite ship is inside this mothership for one, and two, I would have to have a breakout. So okay, if this is Andromeda and you hit the hangar, is there anything in the mothership? Is there anything in the mothership? Okay, then it hits something that's in the hangar, and then I think. I don't know that for sure, but I think you have. I'm not sure whether you can select what gets hit or it's random. I do not know. I haven't looked at that rule for so long. But
What was that
anyway,
question?
yeah, shoot.
What was that question again?
Oh,
If.
if you have multiple satellite ships within a hangar of a mothership, and the mothership
Huh?
gets internal damage, and one of the roles is shuttle, which means you have to hit damn point of damage to something that's in the hangar. when it comes to that, does the person who is getting the damage, the owner of the mothership, get to select which satellite ship gets hit in the hangar, or is it random?
No, I think it's your choice.
Yeah.
'Cause you get to choose pretty much everything else.
Right. Understood.
So I think that one is your choice.
Yeah.
I feel kind of safe in that
Yeah,
one.
I think too, because I think that's the same thing when it comes to shuttle bays. Not like you hit shuttle and then you have to roll to see which actual shuttle box it actually gets hit, whether it had
The
a
only
shuttle
way
or not.
that's kind of important on the random thing is if you're blindly trying to kill to kill the shuttles and hoping to get a special shuttle.
Right.
So you could designate which one's in which, or you could be random. But no, I think it is. I think it's your choice which actual box gets hit, which would mean it would be your choice on which actual sh satellite ship got hit.
Right, or shuttle.
Yeah,
And
or shuttle.
because remember, there's one. That's one of those things that's kind of a little different with Andromedans. That is the hangars. They denote how many spaces are in there, not necessarily how many solid ships can be fit in that spaces. Now, that's part of the configuration because you configure to have different kinds of satellite ships. And but you have to but the solid the mothership has to be configured that way. It's not like it's a wide open hangar. Each space in the hangar, because in theory you could have in a two space hangar, you can have three satellite ships because of like the Viper is something it's like takes two thirds of I think it's I'm pretty sure it takes two thirds of a hangar space. And so if you have if you have set up a mothership with so it can actually hold three Vipers, it's fine. You have two spaces, but you have three Vipers. So they're not exactly the same. And same for when it comes to you have the one and a half. You have the other side, which is the one and a half size satellite ships. Like the Mamba or the Python, which is that's always an interesting thing if you think about the Python. Because the Python actually has a displacement device and it's not a mothership. But anyway, so I would like to do it. And the question, of course, the ultimate question here is, will Jeff be willing to run another tournament? And if so, another 500 BPV tournament. If so, if you're willing to play to run another one, which I'd be happy to play another one. When what race would I play to? What are they still limit? What are the changes that would take place? Overall, I'm thinking about the map because the map was the most was the part of it that people really objected to, which is they thought that the map was I think too large.
Yeah. You know what you could do is just a random thought is you could actually start with the ships at range 35 instead of like on the opposite edge of a huge map and still have the huge map available. You just start off in sensor range. So there's a thought. Another possibility is you could start off using a standard map and having it as a floating map.
Well, that's the one thing that has been, I think, put forward, which is the idea of having a floating map, but you have something like an asteroid or a planet. Most people like a planet because they like the having a terrain feature and the possibility of hiding behind the terrain feature, which I think would be kind of cool. Obviously, other things that could be done. Especially if you want to leave it a large, if you could leave it as a large map, which is like an asteroid field in the middle of the map. Or possibly something, was it Blackfoot Pass, I think it was the scenario where you had the ast an ast you had a pass through an asteroid field, and so you went to, basically it was a tunnel. They have it so you can go through an asteroid field relatively quickly without having to actually take damage from the asteroids themselves, which would be, again, it'd be an interesting terrain feature. Obviously, there's some downsides to having asteroids, and a terrain feature like an asteroid field on the large map, because that'd be definitely used against the drone chuckers or any seeking weapons. They any ship would be hiding. You'd be flying around that asteroid belt, so you could hide within the asteroid belt, or at least try and have it so that you cut the corner and have it so that the seeking weapon has to go through the asteroid field to get to your ship, and therefore damage to it and possibly destroy it before it gets to your ship. But if we were to use a bloody map, I'd say definitely, I think having a planet in the middle of the map, the idea is that you can float so much far from the planet, but the planet can't go off the map. So it puts a definite delimiter on the map itself. Or obviously you can in theory assimilate the same thing for that, and that is having the well, actually, the one thing also with floating maps is that it limits the range that you can get from your opponent. Because of, actually, no, actually, it doesn't, does it? Well, actually, yes, it does if you want to have that ship to remain in the battle. Otherwise, it concedes and it can be marked destroyed or whatever. I'm not sure. I forget what we did for this tournament, whether we said that it was destroyed if it left the board. I'm pretty sure we didn't use the tournament wall rules. I think it was considered destroyed, or at least at the very least disengaged, so it could never come back onto the board. So it was one less ship that you had. But that. I think overall, I think it was a wonderful tournament, and I think it definitely something that we could do again. I think it definitely would be kind of cool to play again, and it would be nice actually if someone wanted to do the same thing for the Federation Commander, because as I pointed out at the beginning of this tournament, way back in February, and I actually saw the post. That's how I know I definitely posted it. I remember it too. But anyway, that is that. Previously, there have been squadron tournaments, when it comes to the Federation Commander portion of the client. And there was a lot more people who did that. Now, obviously you got a lot of people who like SFB, and that's why this was planned and played. And there's less FedCom players, and that reminds me, I have to get rid of that option when it comes to the meeting room, because currently you have a Federation Commander meeting. You have the Federation Commander meeting room, so you go if you log into the FedCom online, that takes you to the Federation Commander meeting room, which is different from the SFB meeting room. So you the reason I originally did that, just for a set of history, because I mentioned this way long ago, I have not mentioned it for a while. So I figure I'll bring it back up again, which is that when it comes to Federation Commander, I mean, I was concerned about that you'd have people in an SFB world and FedCom world in the same meeting room, and they'd be confused. That one person would tell you, "You want to play a game? Yeah, fine, okay." And they would start a FedCom room, and the other person would bring up an SFB room and say, "Hey, where are you?" So. It's just one of I guess the good part about having a single room is that then you have all the players at one time in a single room, and they actually can talk and so forth, versus taking a small group, especially at this moment in time, a small group of individuals and even dividing them even smaller. So that's one thing I need to do. And I want to change it from being called the SFB bullpen to something else. But at the same time, I kind of have to leave it at the SFB bullpen, especially if we have different, because of different versions of the client and so forth. Otherwise, I'm really going to separate two, which actually reminds me I need to look at the client to find figure out what is the default connection. Because I give you alternate connections, but one thing I really need to do, it's past its prime, which is the SAP Online web server needs to be moved. I need to create a new one, migrate everything over to the new server, and start up a new server. Just because of the comes, I get squirrely with when a server gets old, because of I don't want it, even though it's the VM. I don't, and in theory, it should be fine, but a VM located when stored, the storage for it is not virtual, it's physical. And that physical location does not change. But at some point, that physical location for those files is going to start going bye-bye. And it's not like I can replace it while it's running. In theory, I could set up a clone, but I have to shut to do it, I have to shut down the website and then create the clone and then bring it back up. But I don't want to do that, especially because the version of the operating system that's currently running it is a little bit old too. It's end of support was a few years back, so I don't want to. I really should upgrade that to the latest. And currently, it's located in DigitalOcean. DigitalOcean, when it comes to the support of this operating system that I'm running it on, does not it configured it. Strangely, so if I try to update it, it will fork the server. So another reason to actually move to a new server and probably a new provider. For all the rest of my servers, I'm using Vultr, Vultr, as my location instead of DigitalOcean, because it was cheaper. They work great. I like them. But anyway, I think with that, I think we'll wrap it up for this evening. Doug, anything you want to say before we say goodnight?
Yeah, Gamers of Summer is just a few weeks down the road. Feel free to share it on Facebook or any meeting rooms you're in, any BBSs, yada yada yada. Let people know. Paul will be there.
I
I'll
will.
be there. There will be other people there. All sorts of games, plus maybe a little SFP if you want it there.
Right. And
Or if you want some FedCom, you could do that. If you want to do Federation Empire, well, I think you might have to hook up with somebody and bring them along, so or meet them there. But we got space, and we've got 3 days of gaming goodness.
yep.
So.
And for those who play Federation Empire, you have a giant room. The doors get locked at night, so you don't have to worry about someone messing with the game. You can leave the game
Yeah,
out
you can
and
lock it up.
it will be safe. And it won't be messed with, so it's a great venue to play a game and just leave it up for the whole convention. So it's full 3 days, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday, for on Labor Day weekend. So that's a great place for that. Also, a reminder, which I'm not sure, I think I mentioned it before, which is I do plan on streaming I have two streaming sessions. What's going to be on that stream depends on y'all. I'm open to do streaming sessions with as playing against an opponent, but I need an opponent to play those live. If I don't have an opponent, I will actually do basically a demo, a one-person demo of the game that I will be showing. Obviously, I would like to have it so it's a little more action, But you know, I will be doing two streams, one on Saturday, one on Sunday. I have not actually set up, figured out the time yet. My guess at the moment is going to be either 1 or 2 o'clock in the afternoon is when I plan on doing the streaming. Probably 1, because I was thinking about it and I want to be, have it so that I there don't have to be any breaks. It can be done like between lunch and dinner, and we can just go through a single game. Idea is this: the only if somebody wants to play a Fleet Action, we can actually stream both sessions if you're there for both Saturday and Sunday, and we again we can leave it out there overnight and we'll be fine. Obviously, it's a little more difficult when it comes to in person versus SMB Online because you actually have to move the pieces and so forth. Do a little more management, but you know we can still do it. Especially Federation Commander, I think it would be easier because that is has less record keeping to do than the SFB does. But anyway, Doug, with that, Doug, you have a good night.
Thanks for having me on, Paul.
You're welcome. So, ladies and gentlemen, this is a wonderful evening talking about the 500 BPV tournament, the final game, and in that Dana and the Klingons defeated the Federation. The Frank, I forgot to mention this, but Frank said he made a boo-boo. That it seemed like it cost him the game because of the boo-boo. I forgot to mention the boo-boo, so forgive me. If you really want to find out what that was, feel free to go to the discussion board and go look up the 500 BPV tournament. Frank lays it out right there. And hopefully we will have another 500 BPV tournament to play and we'll do this all over again. And hopefully I'll fare a little better. I promise I won't play Sartorians. Maybe I'll play Romulans or maybe the Wynn. Something with drones. I personally I prefer something with plasma, but I promise this, if we play again, I will definitely have a scout, whether it's a plasma chucker or a drone chucker. That's one thing I definitely appreciate. I appreciate those kind of units, the seeking weapons. I really appreciate those. But with that, I'm Paul Franz, and I bid you a good night.